Can Australian servicemen and women work on Indian defense platforms? Can Indian Armed Forces personnel, both men and women, be posted in headquarters of the Australian Armed Forces? Possible is what Australia's High Commissioner Philip Green tells me in this interview, which is coming to you as an SNG podcast. I'm Nitin Gopi. You've been here for 6 months now. What's been your experience, India, Australia, and off India?
Well, you know, it's been fast and furious.
Okay.
Began with a bang in the middle of extraordinary G20, travelling around your country, having my ministers and then my prime minister meeting with Prime Minister Modi, and then the achievement of an impressive G20 here. That was a lot and a big start to my operation here. But, you know, we have a very wide-ranging relationship, which has strong defence and security elements, big trade and economic elements, and increasingly developments relating to what we call the human bridge, the large number of people of Indian origin in Australia. So that, you know, that takes me to every part of this country, and it engages me with every part of your society. And let me say, what I really enjoy is that here people are thinking hard about their country, about the region and the world. They're articulate. They can be argumentative.
They are.
It's a wonderful society in which to test one's ideas and to learn and grow. So that's what I'm really enjoying.
That I'm glad about. But by all accounts, the India-Australia relationship is probably at its peak. So the question always comes to my mind is, from here, where?
Yep.
Where do you go?
So, I know what you mean. You mean that we're at a very high point.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I don't want to be the peak in my commissioner.
Sure.
So, I have an unmet ambition. And of course, we're in a great spot, and right. I am standing on the shoulders of giants. But we want to have a second phase of the free trade agreement. We want to deepen our already strong defence and security arrangements. We think that there's more that we can do in fields like maritime domain awareness. We want to drive more the community of Indians in Australia to make a difference in our commercial links. That's nearly 4% of our population now. They have, and they know this country, they know its business. They have a role to play in trying to drive us to the next phase. And I'm particularly excited about the role that Australia can play in the renewables push by India. You know, I want Australian critical minerals to be the founding elements in your EV scene. I want Australian polysilicon to be the core of a massive solar energy PV manufacturing capability here. And I'd love to see Australian green iron be part of the production of green steel in India. So we got a ways yet to go.
Oh, yes, of course. And commercial relationship, like you mentioned, but more particularly, I'm interested in the people-to-people connection, like you talked about. Indian students were the first wave, I would say. There were some professionals earlier. What are the kind of Indian professionals or Indian origin people you would like to be engaged with Australia? Not just those who are there in Australia right now, but if anybody wants to go to Australia, what kind of influx would you encourage?
Oh, gosh, that would be very wide. Let me say this to you. I think it's very well understood. I mean, people of Indian origin are making a big contribution to our society.
Right.
And our census details show that people of Indian origin Australia are more likely to have higher education than people from other places in Australia. People of Indian origin are more likely to open their own business than other people, other communities in Australia. And this is interesting. People of Indian origin are more likely to be involved in social and community groups in Australia.
True.
So this is a group that's making a big contribution to our society. Look, we've obviously got a lot of people who are strong in IT.
Mm.
We got a lot of people who are strong in business. But, you know, there are many other fields in which Indians can make their way in Australia. We're a very diverse cosmopolitan society with a widely variant sort of economy. So there is no real limit to the sort of the Indians who can make a difference to our society.
I suppose so. And in fact, like you said, Australia also wants to be part of India's story, the growth story and the future technologies. Coming to defense and security,
yep,
which again has really progressed much faster than most other elements in this relationship. You've had Exercise Malabar, where Indian troops have been there. What next in that aspect, really?
Well, we will be doing more and more complex and more frequent exercises. You mentioned Malabar, Ozindex, Milan. Now, Warramunga will be here next month for that. And interoperability between the many platforms that we share, like the P-8, for instance, crucial maritime surveillance aircraft, is something we're looking for. I think we could hope for beyond interoperability to interchangeability.
Mm.
More Australian servicemen working in Indian platforms with Indian platforms. Could we not have Indian Defence Force personnel in our headquarters, sharing some of the load, offering some of their expertise,
sure,
and perhaps learning something as well? So, look, we're going to do more, and it's going to be more frequent, and it's going to be deeper. But I think I really want to find a new level of intimacy that interchangeability characterizes. That is my ambition.
In all aspects of the relationship, not just defense?
Yeah, but I think of that, I mean, but let's be real about this, Nitin. I mean, the defense and security relationship is sensitive. It's at the core of our nation. It's core of your nation.
Right.
It's the sort of thing that only countries that are engaging at a highly trusted level get into.
Right.
So that's why I highlight that. But I mean,
yeah,
you know, do I want more Indian investors to be looking at Australia for their supply mm-hmm. chains? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do I want more Australian firms with smart innovations, let's say in the tech sector,
sure,
to find scale and global supply chains via India, whereas they might have found that before from Silicon Valley or Singapore?
Sure.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
So integration between our economy as well as between our security services is something that I'm looking for.
Yeah. Before broadening the discussion, one of your universities has now come to open a campus in Gujarat.
Mm.
Is that also another aspect of the relationship? Education exchanges, education facilities for Indian students, both in India and in Australia?
Indeed. I think this is one of the real great new horizons. You mentioned large number of Indian students who go to Australia every year. That'll continue. That is good.
Mm.
But it shouldn't be a one-way street.
Right.
And now that your government has opened windows which allow foreign universities to open branch campuses here, and let's understand the reality here, Gift City has allowed the opportunity for foreign branch campuses to open from anywhere in the world. But the only two in the world
mm-hmm.
who have chosen to take up that opportunity are Australians,
yes.
Deakin, which is now open and inaugurated, and Wollongong, which will follow later this year.
Right.
So I like to think of it this way. The student movement business will go on, but it shouldn't be a one-way street.
True.
And the opening of branch campuses here in India will give Indian families new opportunities.
Mm.
The opportunity to get a high-quality Australian degree with an Australian testament
mm.
and all of the prestige that's associated with that at a fraction of the cost.
Yes.
And without the dislocation of a family member being a long way overseas. So many people want to continue to go to Australia. We welcome that. But this opens a new option for Indian families.
Yes, talking about going to Australia, I think it's one of the favorite tourism destinations for Indians.
Not yet favorite enough.
Well,
one of your airline executives said to me the other day, he said, every Indian's objective is to go to Australia one day. Your objective is to make sure that one day is this year. And so that's what I invite Indians to do.
That's true. No, but it's a great destination. And so many options available in Australia. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I think more and more Indians with disposable incomes will certainly, you know, like to go to Australia, explore various options there. But let me come back to the other aspect of the relationship, that both Australia and India are members of the Quad, for instance. Now, where is the Quad going, and what would you think India and Australia can do together to push Quad further ahead?
Yeah, look, the last time I came to India prior to becoming High Commissioner, I came on a mission as the person leading the Quad for Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to contrast that. You know, that was only 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the Quad was undertaking occasional senior officials meetings on the sidelines of other meetings. There was no work program. There was no fixed agenda. Sometimes those meetings issued communiques. If they did, they were slender things of a few lines. And you run the video forward to 2024, and you've got annual Quad summits, you've got working groups, you've got work programs, you've got activities going on between different ministers. So we've come a long way, and the Quad is now established as a fixture in the regional infrastructure, and I think that's a good thing. We need to continue to deliver on our promises on maritime security, on delivering health benefits to people across the Indo-Pacific. We need to do more on infrastructure. We first of all need to deliver on our promise, and then we need to show that there is even more that the Quad can do. And, you know, I'm very confident about that. I mean, I see the Indian government as custodians of this year very active in terms of the things that they would like to see us do next. So I'm very confident that the next phase of the Quad is going to be just as good as the ones that have come.
And India is, of course, the chair this year for the Quad summit. Any idea when is it likely to take place?
I leave that to our distinguished chair to identify when other members can come and be part of a Quad summit. What I will say about this is really important, Nitin, is that Prime Minister Albanese, I've spoken to him about this. He's very keen on the Quad. He'd be very keen to come to somebody, very keen to come back to India. And, you know, he'll be flexible to make sure he's available whenever we can find a date.
Right. Looking at the various conflicts that have broken out in the past couple of years, and not talking about just Russia, Ukraine, but what's happening in the Middle East now, how does that affect Australia's economy? Does it affect, one? And two, what can Australia, India together or alone do to bring down the temperatures, if at all?
It's not just our economy, isn't it, Nitin? Of course, that is affected, and you see that shipping routes are being elongated, which will affect all of us, prices. But we worry about a world which seems to be increasingly having to deal with major conflicts, and that is difficult for a country like ours, difficult for any country. The humanitarian toll in Gaza is terrible, and the situation is dire. My foreign minister has been there in the last 10 days in an effort to add whatever we can to the efforts to find some sort of way forward there. We have long favoured humanitarian pauses to allow supplies to get in and people to get out where that's possible. We have advocated for those humanitarian pauses to be able to lead to a sustainable ceasefire. And we want that to occur, but that ceasefire can't be one way.
Right.
Yes, we want the attacks in Gaza to stop, but also Hamas needs to cease its destabilizing actions, and of course to we can never forget the horror of those initial attacks on citizens, those dreadful terrorist attacks. So we're very concerned about this situation. And we're concerned about a world in which there seems to be, well, there is a proliferation of military expenditure without a balancing capability to manage conflict.
Right. So talking about conflict, there's always this overhang or the shadow of the China factor in relationships of different countries. I mean, Australia has its own bilateral relationship or problems. India has, of course, last 4 years have been terrible, India-China. How do you see that panning out in the Indo-Pacific? I mean, you know, Chinese always keep telling us that you are all ganging up against us. Is that the way you see it?
Well, I don't. And we are stabilizing our bilateral relationship with China after a period of uncomfortable instability. And of course, we should all want a stable relationship with China. So it's a good thing that we have resumed dialogue. And it's a good thing that the rhetorical temperature has come down. And our approach to China is that, you know, we will cooperate where we can, disagree with where we must, and always act in our national interest and always act with our partners. So we are clear-eyed about what is important in a bilateral relationship which can deliver some benefit. We're also conscious that we're also ready to call out things that China does that are not satisfactory. So we recently had divers in international waters, and they were subject to an impact of sonar. And we've been very clear that that sort of unprofessional and dangerous conduct is not acceptable.
Right. So I think India is in the same position that, you know, while you want to do more dialogue if possible, but if they can't, then we'll have to take action in India's national interest. But I can't let you go without asking more cricket bilateral series or one-day series, India-Australia. That's a new rivalry, right, in the town, except the Ashes, perhaps.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a question, isn't it? What's the greatest rivalry now?
Exactly.
Look, it's a wonderful part of our bilateral life. It's difficult for me to have a meeting with anybody in your country without talking about cricket.
Yeah.
And that's a pleasure.
Sure.
It's a passion of mine as well. It also touches on our national life. It's said that the Australian cricket captain is the second most important person in Australia. And his character is an important feature of the Australian character. You know, I was very impressed by the way the Indian cricket team carried itself during that series. And I was totally impressed by the way in which your authorities carried out what was a splendid tournament that we got so much enjoyment out of. But we hope that Indians think kindly and even with respect on our nation, because of the way in which, because of the character of our cricket team. We certainly do about yours.
Right. That's a great way to, you know, conclude our conversation. Thanks very much for your time. And again, insights into where we are as far as India-Australia relations are concerned. Hopefully, we'll have more conversations going forward during your tenure.
We definitely will. Great to be with you, Nitin.